I speak to you in the name of the Word made flesh. Amen. His name is Alec Kabagunkan. He is the young man in the wheelchair who hosts the Shriners Hospital ads. He suffers from a rare, brittle bone disease that makes his bones very fragile and they break all the time. If you watch television at all, you have seen Alec and all the other children and young people who tell the story of Shriners Hospital and ask our help. Children are supposed to be beautiful and bright and joyful. We treasure their birth and delight in their growing up. Their young bodies are a glory and are beautiful. Except for the teenage girl who only has one arm. Or the young small girl with no arms having makeup applied by a friend. Or the young boy with prosthetic legs who rides a bike for the first time in his life. How did glory become synonymous with beautiful? We said all the time, what a glorious performance of the Beethoven Ninth Symphony. What glorious sculptures by Michelangelo. What glorious poetry by Shakespeare. But how did glory become synonymous with beauty? On this Sunday after Christmas, we have heard the ancient confession of the glory of God come close to us. We have listened again to that breathless prologue to the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. It is the beginning and the end of all our thoughts about the mystery of this season. We actually don't know much about the factual details of Jesus' birth. That he was born is essential to Christian faith. But the stories about Bethlehem and shepherds and wise men and mangers are largely the creation of Luke to give Christians a birth story for their God. But long after, it dawned on John and others like him that the power and the glory of God in the flesh transcends the limits of history. If it is true that the eternal, invisible God, creator of the universe, has entered into the creation, it must be resplendent in its glory, but not necessarily beautiful. We have no trouble being awed by the beauty of creation and creation's God. Those two egrets who lifted so gracefully off my pond yesterday and just circled around higher and higher and higher. Beautiful. The sky painted orange and pink at sunset. Beautiful. The sand and the water of the beach. Beautiful. The suppleness of limb and energy and laughter of my grandchildren. Beautiful. But the creation is not always beautiful. As Kierkegaard reminded us, beauty is not the same as divinity. The rhythms of creation sometimes turn cruel and arbitrary. Some children are born with brittle bones or missing arms and legs. Some are born with diminished minds or mixed up wiring. We love them and hope for the best. But there will always be children needing Shriners Hospital and other places. So how did glory become synonymous with beauty? That is not from John, for whom the fullest glory of God is Jesus on the cross. It is more daunting to confess faith in the fullness of creation and the goodness of the Creator than to be satisfied with only the beautiful. We peer out from our small rotating ball and watch the swirling chaos all around us, and yet there's pattern in the chaos. We witness the birth and death of stars and can just be puzzled at the local and immediate beauty of our earth. We are mystified that God may have come to indwell this enormous and intimate creation. And in the afterglow of this Christmas season, We pause to imagine glory among us, even if it's not always beautiful. John Merrick was born in England in the 1800s. Suffering from birth an unknown skin and bone disorder that left his adult body a travesty of human form. His head was deformed by a massive protrusion of bone that entirely distorted his face, made it difficult for him to speak, and impossible to smile. The most frightening part of him was his right arm, which was the length and girth of a leg and ended in a hand like a fin or paddle. His left arm and hand were untouched by his disorder, were normal, even delicate. He was lame in one leg, and his entire body was covered with large, shapeless growths that gave off a repulsive smell. Such a person, such a child, of course, was finally turned away by his family, eventually exhibited by a carnival barker, and finally rescued by Dr. Frederick Treves, who brought him to live in at least safety in the London hospital. Over the rest of the years of John Merrick's life, Dr. Treves tried to understand his condition, tried to create some semblance of regular life. Dr. Treves tried to introduce John even to women so he could engage the normal world. In the movie based on his story, The Elephant Man, Dr. Treves asked a leading actress of the day, Mrs. Kendall, to call on John Merrick, to engage him in conversation, and then to end her visit with a normal social cliche. "I am very pleased to have made your acquaintance, Mr. Merrick." And she was supposed to shake his left or normal hand. Well, she did visit Mr. Merrick, and even as an actress is unprepared for her encounter. But during the visit, she begins to see John Merrick as a person, witty, sensible, intelligent, to see him, not his body. When her visit is over, she delivers her exit line and extends her hand to shake his hand. But instead of her left hand, she extends her right hand. Although John Merrick attempts to take her hand with his left good hand, she will only clasp him in the way she would any other person, her right hand to his right hand. The Word was made flesh and lived among us. I have seen that scene many times in watching the movie. I always hear myself gasping when Mrs. Kendall shakes John Merrick's hand. It is the glory of God and not the beauty of the human form that has been grasped and held and cherished. St. Paul reminds us, "The creation groans in travail until it will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God." The mystery of the Word made flesh is that God works in darkness as well as in light. God works in darkness as well as in light. And that the disfigurement of beauty does not cause glory not to shine. Not long after he was elected Bishop of Rome, Pope Francis gave a general audience in St. Peter's Square. On television around the world, he was seen comforting a man suffering from a rare disease that caused tumors all over his body, all over his head and face and his body. Francis just embraced this man. It is the glory of God, not the beauty of the human form, that brings light to the world. We rightfully love beauty. So many things bring us great joy. We are awed and truly grateful for the beautiful, the majestic, the breathless things of creation. But in this season, let us celebrate the Word become flesh. Let us rejoice that God has entered the creation, has come to dwell with us. And let us resolve to prefer glory to beauty and to see glory wherever we look. It is the glory that gives us hope. Amen.